Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick. New Mexico and the city of Albuquerque are among dozens of communities across the country bidding for a second headquarters for Amazon. The company has promised the successful bidder in this competition will get $5 billion in investment and 50,000 jobs. Amazon is just the latest in a line of large companies New Mexico and many others have tried to persuade to move into their communities. And like many places, New Mexico has used tax incentives to sweeten the pot. That's one reason we got a Facebook data center, and this week Facebook announced it would triple the size of that project in Los Lunas. Today on Let's Talk New Mexico, we look at whether jumping into this quest to land mega deals makes sense for our struggling economy. Supporters say landing just one really big project could be a game changer. Critics ask why giant companies need tax incentives and whether they're worth the cost. What do you think? How does going after big deals benefit us? What would you like to see in terms of job growth in New Mexico, and what's the best way to do it? Call now, 277-5866, or email letstalk@kunm.org. Joining us is Tim Nitti. He is president and CEO of the New Mexico Partnership. The partnership recruits outside companies to the state. But before Tim became the state's chief recruiter, he worked with companies on the process of choosing sites for relocation or expanding. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Megan. Thanks for having me.
What are companies' top priorities when they're looking to move or expand?
It can vary a lot by company and by project, but ultimately I'd say if there's one thing that stands out as today being most important, it comes down to talent and the ability to keep the kind of talent you need. Smart companies know that the baby boom bulk of new entrants to the workforce has passed us by at this point. We used to be growing at about 2% per annum on our workforce. We're going to be down below that. We're already down below that, and it's going to keep getting a smaller growth rate on and on. And with that in mind, companies know you have to be in a place that can provide you great indigenous talent, that grows great talent out of its universities, community colleges, and high schools. And then also, you have to be able to attract talent.
When you say indigenous talent, we're not talking about necessarily Native Americans.
No.
You're talking people who are already here.
Who are already here.
Okay. So what role do incentives play in that decision-making process?
Incentives can never make a bad location decision a good one. You can't go anyplace just to get incentives. But at the end of the day, I always chuckle when I hear people tell me that companies really don't value incentives. They really don't base their decision on it. In 20 years of advising companies, I never once saw a company not value those incentives. They will often be a tiebreaker. If everyone's done their job well, by the time you get to a set of finalists, every one of them better be a viable option. And if all of them are viable options, then it comes down to where can they partner with you to make the pro forma the best for your decision. And big companies have stockholders and shareholders that they're beholden to. They're responsible to get them the best economic performance possible. I would say that it always matters. Does it work in the way that people sometimes think it is, where people believe that companies are willing to bankrupt the community to get a good deal for themselves? Most companies are more far-seeing than that. They understand they need to operate in this place. They're making a long-term investment. They're becoming a corporate citizen of the community, and they're looking for a mutually beneficial solution. And if they're not, then community should say no.
How are you presenting New Mexico now when you're out actually recruiting companies?
We lead with the strategic fit for what their business needs, and that's usually talent, infrastructure, logistics capability, the university system, the community college system. When there's strong real estate needs, we try and line them up with the right real estates or sites where they can build that real estate. And then do we talk about incentives? Usually last.
So what are the state's strong points?
When we talk to companies in the state, and that's the first place to get a good indicator of this, it is the talent. And it's not just the numbers of folks and their skill sets. It's also work ethic and attitude. And that really can be a differentiator. And it's a tough one to get to companies except by going out and talking to them and saying, here's what your peers experience when they're here. That's a huge benefit. Another huge benefit is in today's world, just about any sophisticated operation, even a small one, is going to have a certain segment of roles where anywhere they locate, they're going to do a national, if not a global, recruit for those sorts of positions. And being in a place where you can attract the best talent is really critical going forward. And we actually in New Mexico have a tremendous track record of attracting extremely sophisticated, highly in-demand talent, not for years, but for decades. We have two Department of Energy national labs who staff this way. We have the Air Force Research Lab here in Albuquerque that has staffed by pulling in highly technical, highly in-demand talent that really has its choice of where it wants to go. And traditionally, those institutions have had a tremendous job being able to recruit talent to this state. And our three big national research universities, obviously they're hiring PhD-level researchers and faculty, and they're able to attract folks to New Mexico.
Although I will say I've heard anecdotally difficulties among some of folks at UNM to find and retain some of that talent. So what are our weak points?
Well, and I'll address that, and then I'll get to weak points. It's funny, and maybe I bring a unique perspective, because I have traveled for 20 years to places, not just across the U.S., but across the world. And I'll hear things like, gee, you know, for highly sought after, highly technical people, it's tough to attract them. Or it's always challenging to recruit from outside, as though it's unique to that place. Trying to get top talent to come to you from across the world is always hard. I mean, HR professionals know that they never have an easy job. It's a lot easier here. When I hear people talk about what hard means here versus what hard means in a lot of places, it can mean very different things. And what we classify as hard, I would say for most people, they'd look at that and go, you're doing pretty good. In terms of challenges, I think our single biggest challenge, and I've seen this as an outsider, is lack of familiarity with New Mexico. And it is tough to get someone to invest or to even know that you're an option for investing when they're not familiar with you. And it is one thing when I talk to folks in New Mexico, I find we are a sort of bunch that does not like to toot our own horns and is often very self-critical. And often what we point out as flaws and challenges are things that everybody deals with in some capacity. When I talk to folks outside of New Mexico about why they're not looking at New Mexico, it's not I have a negative set of perceptions. It's I don't know enough about it. That's kind of a good news, bad news story. Bad news, we have to raise the profile of the state if we're going to continue to attract companies and investment and talent to the state. People have to be familiar before they make that decision. The good news is by and large, we're not replacing a negative narrative. And that's really tough to do. I'd rather have the challenge of raising the profile of the state and putting a positive narrative into a vacuum any day over having to reverse long-held opinions that are negative about a place.
Also joining us is Gary Tonjes. He's CEO of Albuquerque Economic Development. It's a nonprofit organization whose mission is to recruit new employers in industry and help local companies grow. Gary, the most prominent company offering one of these mega deals right now is Amazon. It issued a request for proposals, essentially a description of what it's looking to do and a list of requirements for wherever it locates. What does the company say a state or a community must have?
Well, the most important element that they identified, obviously, is that which Tim just touched on, and that is talent. They're looking for a community wherein talent exists and where talent can be grown and where it can be recruited. And Albuquerque, New Mexico, has all of those things. And so that is the lion's share of it. And if you're looking to grow, you know, to 50,000 employees over a 10 to 15 year period of time, that has to be and is the overriding concern for the company. Additionally, they were looking for real estate options, creative real estate options, looking for every sustainability measure that you can imagine, looking for communities who believe in mass transit and can provide solutions around that, looking really more for, while they didn't say it clearly, it suggested, you know, more of an urban kind of a feel where you've got live work. You can bicycle to work. You could ride the rail runner. You could ride ART. Your mass transit is important to them as well.
Now, part of the pitch includes the idea of a binational location on the border. Can you say something briefly about that?
Yeah, so one of the things that we did, Secretary Geisel, who works for the governor
He's the economic development secretary. Could not be with us today.
Secretary for the state, right. And Tim Nitti from the New Mexico Partnership and Gary Opadal with the city. We all got together, and really it was a conversation about how do we put forward the best thing, the best proposal. So Amazon did give some direction inside that proposal, which said we certainly would welcome joint proposals. You know, if so, there's 238 or whatever the number is, proposals that made it to the desk. You can imagine they might like to see more uniform proposals. And so the Mesilla Valley Economic Development Group, and Davin Lopez leads that, really wanted to put forward this binational location option for their consideration. The company asked for creative, out-of-the-box opportunities, and certainly that is one. And so the state said, hey, why don't we do a joint proposal in that regard? And so we have essentially Albuquerque Metro, Albuquerque Santa Fe region is more that which we constructed, coupled with this binational option.
Now, Tim Nitti and Gary Tonjes, this announcement has set off a mad scramble by cities and states to woo Amazon. Some are offering tens of billions of dollars in subsidies or tax incentives. What is New Mexico offering?
Well, in terms of specifics, we did sign some non-disclosure agreements. So, you know, I'll be high level. I think the state made a smart choice, and they used the tools we already have on the books. So nobody at this point has done anything. We've heard about New Jersey offering, I think it was $5 to $7 billion. New Mexico has chosen to use the statutory incentives that exist today and to apply those to the project.
I know that these non-disclosure agreements are common in business, but we're talking about public resources, maybe tax abatements. Why can't we talk about what's being proposed? I just want to ask you.
I think once anything was actually offered formally, I think there are disclosure agreements. But at the proposal stage, most states like ours tend to protect these. The most important reason is, of course, we are in competition. And while I keep having everybody tell me that it's a long shot for New Mexico to win this, and I agree it's a long shot for anyone who's competing, and any piece of information we give to our competitors, I think just hurts us. And I think I, like many people, are taking this competition seriously. We're not assuming that this is just pro forma and it really doesn't matter. We're in there really competing, and giving anything to our competitors is something I'd be reluctant to do.
Megan, if I could add there, you know, it is essentially it's a proposal, but every element that is being presented to them requires a formal action by a governmental body. So elected representatives of the people, whether they be the mayor or city council or county commission or the legislature and governor, they will be weighing in if we were fortunate enough to get to that next level.
I want to take a call real quick. Tamara from Albuquerque, you are on the line. What did you want to say?
I have looked at the RFP online, and it appears to me there are four core requirements, of which Albuquerque meets two. We have the population. We have access to highway or highways. We are not within 45 minutes of an international airport, and we do not have mass transit to a site, unless the site is somewhere at the end of Central Avenue.
Okay.
And so my other question, like real question, is how much does it cost the city to prepare a proposal? Since if I were writing a bid, I would first of all want to be sure that I would meet the core requirements. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for calling. Gary Tonjes or Tim Nitti, either of you want to tackle that?
Sure. Well, you know, I think one of the things appreciate her call and her question, and that she was interested enough to look at the elements of the requirement, because that is important. And so, you know, you look at the mass transit piece. Let's start with that. Obviously, we do not have the level of scale in mass transit that many of the cities that are putting forward have. But yes, you do try to present the very best option that you can that meets their requirements. And so absolutely, there was a downtown site that was presented to them for consideration, and the reason for that was connections to the Rail Runner, connections to ART, and bicycle lanes and live-work opportunities as well, people who can walk over to offices.
What about the International Airport?
Yeah, so... True, by name, but not by flight today, which is a big differentiator. But, you know, what we also recognize is wherever it is that the company would choose to go, you're going to have airlines who are paying attention to that as well. And we're not going to overnight have, you know, 20 flights from Dubai to, Shanghai. We're, you know, this is... phased growth over time, and the community would be growing just as our air service would be growing over time. It may be. Who knows? It may be they look at it and say, that doesn't make the cut. But we don't know what weighting they put to that. Mm-hmm. And so we think it's imperative that we show up and we tell New Mexico's story.
Sure. And while they said International Airport, what they really did is listed, I believe it was 8 or 9 cities in the U.S. that they expected to see direct flights to. And we actually checked every one of those boxes.
Okay. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We have to take a break, but we'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Support comes from DaVita Medical Group, who believes everything matters. During this year's open enrollment period, there are choices when it comes to healthcare. More information on DaVita Medical Group at DaVitaMedGroupNM.com.
When Robert Schumann wrote this, his life was full of difficulties and disappointment. At times, depression and despair. But his Symphony No. 2 radiates pure sunshine. Life and art. Robert Schumann from a concert at the Aspen Festival on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick, and we're talking about recruiting big employers here and developing jobs. We landed one big company recently, Facebook, which announced this week it will expand its facility in Los Lunas. We're also pitching for Amazon's second headquarters, which promises 50,000 jobs. Would you be excited to see a big project like that land in New Mexico? Why or why not? Call now, 277-5866, or email letstalk@kunm.org. Also joining us is Greg Leroy. He is with Good Jobs First. It's a national policy organization that tracks subsidies. Greg, your organization has tracked a lot of subsidies that have gone to Amazon around the country over the years, some coverage of that in Albuquerque Business First. Give us a thumbnail sketch of what kinds of incentives Amazon has received.
Well, there's two kinds of facilities that they've located with incentives so far. The fulfillment centers or, you know, warehouses for their distribution network, and that's been growing rapidly, and they've been getting a lot of more incentives as they've been building out that network in recent years. And people don't know, but Amazon's also the biggest player in the cloud, cloud computing, the Amazon Web Services. So they've also been getting big incentive packages for their data centers or server farms, like the one that Facebook is building there in Las Lunas.
So, running
total that we've estimated and we keep a tally on our website is a little bit more than $1.3 billion so far. And I would hasten to add, some deals we can't attach a dollar figure to because there's insufficient disclosure.
Well, we've heard that, we're dealing with that with non-disclosure agreements as we bid for this. So I think a lot of people just looking at this would say many of these companies make billions of dollars. Why do they need subsidies?
Well, and that's a great question. And, speaking especially to Tim's explanation of how companies look, you know, talent really does matter. In fact, all state and local taxes combined as a cost variable for the average company in America, all of them put together only come to a little bit less than 2% of a company's cost structure, which is to say the business basics, labor, occupancy, raw materials, logistics, energy, you know, information technology, et cetera, comprise more than 98% of their cost structure. And that's why those variables almost always determine where a company expands or relocates. And in this case, the headquarters deal is profoundly different than warehouse or data center location variables, because it is, as both Tim and Gary emphasized, about the executive talent pool. So they're really clearly looking at places that already have a lot of corporate headquarters, have a lot of strong graduate engineering and business and accounting and legal graduate programs, so that they can both, you know, poach some executives from other large companies that are headquartered in that talent pool, and hire people graduating from universities and get them to and from work on a great transit system. That's the whole story, I think.
So the secrecy that Amazon is imposing on communities and states vying for the headquarters, is that typical for companies like this and other big firms? Is that usually what happens?
Actually, I don't think it's been stated correctly here yet.
Okay.
Amazon, as a condition of responding to the RFP, has imposed no conditions about those documents. And a few cities have disclosed them already.
Okay.
And there's actually a hub at a nonprofit group called muckrock.com collecting all the disclosed publicly available FOIA bids, you know, Freedom of Information Act bids. What Amazon does say is that at the point where if they were to engage with a city or a county or a state and begin to exchange proprietary business information, if they really they made the short list and they were, you know, exchanging sensitive business information, that would be protected. And that's completely common and normal. But our view about this public auction is that it's very unusual for a company to conduct an auction publicly like this. It's 99.99% of these deals are not handled this way. And for Amazon to then get all the benefits of having a big public auction, which in turn puts enormous pressure on those cities that at the end of the process will be the shortlist finalists, to have the benefits of all that pressure, but then insist, you know, on the idea that public officials want to keep things secret, we think is just wrongheaded. You know, public officials are not bound by the normal rules here. They're not bound by secrecy agreements. Everybody knows from news reports who the other competing bids are. So let's have it all out in the public. And let's look at it all together.
Well, Tim, let me ask you, how do we balance common practices in business, like private business, like non-disclosure agreements when deals are in progress, with public resources, which are usually what's offered in these economic development deals?
Yeah, and at early stages, there are NDAs in place. And my organization does have an NDA with Amazon, and therefore there are limits to what we can talk about. When there are incentives actually offered, states and communities do have rules in place as to disclosure. And
so,
if they don't, they absolutely should.
Let me ask you, this week Facebook announced it would triple the size of its data center that it has under construction in Los Lunas. That means a $1 billion investment, that's according to the company, and up to 1,000 construction jobs, but only 50 permanent jobs. And New Mexico competed for this center, beating out Utah, and offered incentives. Those included a $30 billion industrial revenue bonds. Those provide a 30-year property tax break, $10 million in Local Economic Development Act funding, access to $3 million in state job training funds, and up to $1.6 million in gross receipts tax reimbursement annually. When you consulted with corporations, how would you evaluate a deal like that? Is that extremely attractive?
Well, there are a couple of things. One on the 50 jobs, I believe that was phase one. I've heard numbers as high as 300 for the whole facility.
For the permanent jobs.
For the permanent jobs.
Okay.
In terms of data centers, honestly, we did a number of them in my practice. It was a growing trend where states gave away virtually all tax revenues, and that's a bad deal. There were no receipt taxes or sales taxes on electricity. They abated all property taxes, and that's the way a lot of states competed. My understanding of this deal, and I was not directly involved, that's not what New Mexico did. I was frankly sort of surprised when I first got here and saw the broad strokes on the deal that Facebook agreed to what New Mexico offered.
You thought they would push for more? Okay.
It's not unusual to see 30 years of full tax abatement.
Okay.
And then I question what the community gets out of it at all. I know I saw in the paper the other day, Los Lunas, where the data center is going up, just this quarter saw a $2 million increase in their gross receipts tax. And they attributed that almost entirely to the Facebook phase one construction.
Although they all will have to rebate some of those revenues every year. $1.6 million in gross receipts tax reimbursement. Well, maybe that's to the state. Let me ask Greg real quick. Greg, what do you see as potentially problematic about a deal like that?
You know, we've been trying to get Los Lunas to value the property tax abatement that is bundled with the industrial revenue bonds. And they have refused to do that for us. Well, we tried to include the as a case study in a study that we published there in New Mexico last spring. So we hope that under this new account, there's a new government accounting requirement called Statement 77 from this obscure body called GASB. And we hope that when they file their financial report under this new accounting rule, that the city will finally disclose the value of that the property tax abatement value of that transaction. The broader point about data centers is that they do employ a lot of people during the construction phase, but then the number of permanent jobs is very low. You know, the key site location variables have to do with electricity, because that's the biggest input cost for these things, and then latency, you know, being spread around to maximize people's experience when they're retrieving things on the web. And Facebook, like some of the other high-tech companies, is also very big on being supplied by renewable energy, and I understand that facility is. So
that's true.
It's not going to be a big job generator after the construction phase.
I want to take a call real quick. We have Carolyn from Albuquerque who had a question about can the land support growth? Carolyn, are you there?
Thank you very much. Growth is very exciting, but there's a reason why we chose Albuquerque over Phoenix. And my question is it really possible that the desert can sustain, can uphold, support that kind of growth? There's limited land, and I'm very grateful to the pueblos on all sides that restrict the growth. So where is the growth going to happen, and is anybody responsibly researching what the land can support? Thank you very much.
I will kick that over to Gary Tonjes, because that came up as well with an earlier employer, Intel. And so someone else earlier had called, he dropped off, but he also asked about water. So do we have the land and the water to support this kind of growth?
We do. And
where would it happen?
Where would what happen?
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So our focus is the Albuquerque metro area. And so we did work the Facebook project, and I want to come back and address some of the things that were said in that regard. And Belen, and so you look at the entire metro area from the East Mountain area to Rio Rancho, which has considerable opportunities for future growth, the west side of Albuquerque, and going south as well. And so in every conversation, there is absolutely concern with regard to or consideration given to a variety of factors, and transportation is one of those issues, land availability, the support of that, and the infrastructure needed to be able to support that, water always. And so water is such an extraordinarily, obviously, important issue, and you want to take great care. And so for any of these, you look at what that overall benefit is going to be to the community. If you've got the most important asset in water, you don't want to be reckless about it. And I think that our community, the broader community, has done exceptionally well in that regard. You look at the achievements, the progress that the citizens of this community have made through the Albuquerque Bernalillo County Water Utility Authority, wherein that has been so strong, not just for sustainability of the current population, but to be able to support reasonable growth going forward. We have now the aquifer in different places in the Northeast Heights is up 10, 15, 20 feet from where it was a few years ago. It's rising. And so why is that? Is because this community was very smart about it.
I think there has been a bit of critique, though, in terms of long-term what our water situation looks like in terms of sustainability. So it does go to the question, even if we conserve it, which we have done a great job at, long-term, do we have an idea of how much we can support in terms of growth?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, okay. The Albuquerque Bernalillo County Water Utility Authority adopted a 100-year plan.
Okay.
They are more on top of it.
Does it factor in things like climate change, though?
I think it considers all of those things. I would encourage everybody to go to their website and look at that plan and look at the significant achievements that they have done. It's the model for the rest of the country to give consideration to. And so no one's going to be reckless about it. We don't have a conversation with, you know, a larger water user without first having had a conversation with the water utility authority to get their perspective on the project, on their ability to serve them as well.
I did want to ask about an earlier employer, Intel, has mm-hmm. struggled a bit over the years as some of the newer technology has gone to other Intel mm-hmm. sites. And so there's not nearly as many people employed there. This was some time ago in terms of what we offered and incentives. I guess the big question is, like, was it worth it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, there is, you name for me one other employer who has done more for the state, more for the school system, more for charitable organizations, more for housing value, more for construction. They absolutely have, and they continue to. Yeah, they're off of their peak, but they have 2,200 employees still on site. Where else do you see that? At $100,000 a year in salaries plus benefits. They, I think that through their industrial revenue bond agreement, so this is years ago, they still are paying millions of dollars to the county. Last year, $9 million went to Sandoval County from Intel. And so, you know, they also paid $700,000 to Sandoval County for property tax. And they invested more than $50 million last year in the facility into essentially ongoing, you know, trying to find that next niche. And so we would be well served in this state were we to have another Intel or two or three. I mean, the elected officials who put that deal together spent a lot of time looking at how it is that you best serve the community. Jobs was an important element of that, but so too Intel giving back to the community. And they have done so beautifully, including building what is arguably one of the most successful schools, high schools in the state of New Mexico.
I have a Twitter comment that came in. It says, yes, Amazon would be good for Albuquerque in the long run, but it would also mean mass construction, traffic, and gentrification, which I think Seattle has dealt with. Let me go back to Greg Leroy. Greg, our economy has really been struggling here. We have one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation. People are leaving in unprecedented numbers, according to a study earlier this year. Meanwhile, all the states around us have rebounded from recession. Why shouldn't we make a big play for large employers with incentives?
Because we think that overspending on these mecha deals, the euphemism in the profession is buffalo hunting, is a losing proposition. There is a new normal in economic development today, and that is a depressed deal flow. It reflects the fact that, for some reason, there's a decline in entrepreneurship in the United States. There are fewer startups. There are fewer young companies. There are fewer so-called gazelles or rapidly growing young companies. And that has caused cities to try to swing for the fences, to try to, you know, hunt the buffaloes rather than focusing back on growing their own, focusing on entrepreneurship, focusing on expansion of existing employers, identifying promising clusters of existing companies that could be grown together with partnerships through university systems and other, you know, private and public sector entities. We think that's a smarter strategy. This buffalo hunting and overspending on mega deals, we think, is really distorting spending priorities in a way that's shortchanging the companies that really do have the greatest potential to steadily grow the number of jobs.
That gives me a great segue to go to another Gary sitting at the table, Gary Opedal. Not to be confused with Gary Tondras. Gary Opedal is Director of Economic Development with the City of Albuquerque. So, Gary, Greg says we should go back to basics on economic development, not put so many resources towards these mega deals. Your reaction?
I would love to sit down with Greg and show him all of the major things we've done for our entrepreneurs in building that ecosystem. And I have to tell you, it's an and, not an or. Okay, we don't have to make a choice of going after great companies that help augment our jobs and our economic mobility, or go for entrepreneurism and looking at supporting our existing companies. The state has a LEADA program. The city has a LEADA program. The city council voted $10 million into that program. 80% of those dollars so far have gone to local startups and companies like Scorpios and RiskSense and McClintock, who does machines for mining. So we are doing both. And that's the key. You have to. You can't just say, well, we're only going to go buffalo hunting or we're only going to go for entrepreneurism. You do both. And that's why you see these talented individuals I'm sitting with who are doing concentrating on that part. We're concentrating on the existing businesses and growing new ones. Look at bioscience.
This is the bioscience incubator?
We have a bioscience...
Or the bioscience sector, sorry.
We voted a bioscience authority in the legislature last year. That bioscience authority has already attracted investment into the city. We've had 32 bioscience startups in the last 3 years, one of which, IntelliSite, just was purchased for $90 million by a mega corporation internationally who did not move it from Albuquerque. They recognized the talent was here. They not only kept it here, they're growing it here. They bought another company in Colorado and are moving those assets here. So we are doing both. And I want to make sure everybody understands that.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We will be right back.
KUNM is really thankful for all of the wonderful people throughout New Mexico and in other states who have donated their car or truck to us this year. We have been able to avoid adding a third week of on-air fundraising, largely thanks to you. It's a painless way to support KUNM, and your unwanted vehicle may be worth more as a tax deduction than as a trade. See if yours qualifies. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
I'm Tara Gatewood, host of Native America Calling. For the past 27 years, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act has helped tribes bring back the remains of their ancestors that were housed in museum collections. On our next hour, we'll peer into this history and what's ahead for those who call upon this law. We hope you'll join us.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking about economic development and jobs and building local companies as well as recruiting big corporations here. Are you trying to launch or grow a company here? Are you a recent graduate who has had to leave for work? Or did you find an opportunity here? What do you think would be the most effective way to bring more jobs here? Call 277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. Greg LeRoy, I know you have to go this morning. I just wanted to wrap up with you with one question. It's difficult for states and communities to decide on their own. They just aren't going to play the incentive game if everyone else is doing it. What about efforts to limit how these can be used at a federal level or even a regional level? Do you ever see that happening?
There was a federal lawsuit that came to naught back in 2006, and there's never been federal legislation. The National Governors Association has not debated this issue for 24 years, so I'm not waiting for any good news from inside the Beltway. We do like there are two longstanding regional models in the Denver and Dayton, Ohio metropolitan areas where local governments agree not to poach from each other. They participate together in recruitment from deals outside. They have competitive systems that favor retention of companies if they can stay in existing communities. They focus a lot on growing their own. And we think those regions have been very well served by those models. But they can't. You're right. Right now, with the lack of federal leadership, the only other bright spot has been an effort by some business leaders in the Kansas City metropolitan area who actually convinced Missouri to put a legally binding offer on the table back in 2014, offering Sam Brownback a ceasefire in the Kansas City metropolitan area. Unfortunately, Governor Brownback let that offer expire back in the summer of 2016.
A ceasefire, like not using incentive?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I should have explained. Okay. Yeah, not using tax dollars to just let companies go back and forth across the state line there in the Kansas City metro area, not creating any new jobs, just changing people's commuting routes.
So you mentioned this real briefly, but you mentioned these new GASB standards, the General Accounting Standards Board. They're new standards that would require localities and states to report how much revenue they lose to corporate tax breaks for economic development. How do you think that's going to affect any of those?
Well, we hope it's going to change the debate because we've really had kind of a cost-benefit debate for 80 years without really knowing all the costs. There's still lots of spending in this area that's just not disclosed at all. And we think about 50,000 bodies of government, mostly local governments, cities, counties, states, are going to disclose this. State Auditor Kim Teller, actually there in New Mexico, is the leading advocate for exercising this because he had so much history on promoting sunshine when he was a state legislator. He's the only state auditor or comptroller or treasurer who has committed himself to gathering all this information from your local governments all around the state and then collating it and putting it online.
And he is now our new mayor of Albuquerque.
So I heard.
Greg LeRoy with Good Jobs. First, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We've linked to some of your work on our website at KUNM.org.
Thanks a lot.
Also joining us is Lisa Kutila. She is CEO of STC-UNM. It oversees the transfer of technology from the University of New Mexico into the market, and she works on building up an entrepreneurial ecosystem in the state. Lisa, I know, as Gary said, there's an increasing focus here on building the entrepreneurial community. How do we actually build an idea into a company that has employees here in New Mexico?
Well, thank you, Megan. It's a long process, of course, to get a new startup launched, and it takes the resources of, you know, capital, entrepreneurs, service providers, many support organizations that help launch new companies. I think we are fortunate in New Mexico to have good connectivity among our organizations and a steady supply of really...
And do you mean by that, like, you're sharing information and resources, not
right.
necessarily internet lines?
Right.
But, okay.
people work together very well. Mm-hmm. And I've worked in four other states in similar capacities, and I find the level of cooperation to help launch these new businesses to be very high here. We have, from the University of New Mexico, a rate of spinning off 10 or 12 companies every year. So for the research base here, I think we're doing quite well in that regard. We also have the advantage of a supply of CEO talent, and that's really due to our place. Many people have second homes in Santa Fe who have been successful in their businesses in other parts of the country. They like coming here. They may want to move here. We have actually tapped into that supply to lead some of our new startups. About 40% of the 115 or so new startup companies coming out of the university have been these what we call transplant CEOs who start them.
I had a quick web comment going back to our discussion on Amazon. Amazon is no friend to labor, and their business decimates small businesses and big businesses, too. They are certainly disruptive. That is true. What kinds of jobs will be offered to local workers? We got fooled by Walmart into supplementing inadequate wages. Do we have an idea of the terms of what they will seek for local workers versus recruiting out of state?
It's always in the best interest of a company to hire as many people locally as they possibly can. That is their number one goal.
Do we know what the wage levels will be?
It's less expensive. I don't remember the exact number. Do you, Tim?
The average projection by Amazon, it'll be $100,000 per year per job.
Okay.
So, you know, And you look at construction. I want to touch on Facebook because there was a little bit of, I'm not sure if criticism is the right word, but you're talking about that project. That the land where they located, 300 acres west of Los Lunas, generated $10 a year in property tax to the village of Los Lunas. Now, it's $2 million net new per quarter, at least going into it after the first building. So what happened? The village of Los Lunas earlier this year gave a 9% cost of living increase to all employees who had not had one in the last 3 years. Why? Because they've got confidence and they have revenue where they didn't have any before. They also have optimism because they're seeing additional investment coming in. So small businesses are beneficiaries. Labor is a beneficiary. We saw International Brotherhood of Electric Workers. One of their members said to me, for the first time, I'm able to buy a house because of the stability of this operation. So there are lots of benefits to come. Amazon would be similar in that because of, I mean, you're bringing billions of dollars new into the community. That will impact positively a lot of different areas.
I do have a caller who had a question about the Facebook site and how much water they might use. Are you on the line, Ralph, from Santa Fe?
I am. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here in Santa Fe, and I meet with a group of guys that we smoke cigars and stuff in Santa Fe, and they're saying, you know, are our leaders protecting our water? We're in the desert. or, you know, that question has not been answered.
Well, we
how
talked,
much water okay. will Facebook use per month in the desert?
Okay. Thanks so much, Ralph. Do we know that?
Yeah, I don't know what that number is. What they do is work off this theoretical maximum, which is you take the hottest day of the year and you multiply that for 365 days and then determine what that would use. So they had looked at initially when they were looking at the community, while they said, hey, we're always looking at new technologies, recently they've made a determination to take advantage of one of the significant benefits we can offer a data center, which is air cooling as opposed to water cooling. So it is going to be, nominal is not the right word, but it is not going to be a large impact.
Okay. I want to circle back when we were talking about also our local entrepreneurial ecosystem, because we have on the line Lori Upham. She's an entrepreneur who moved here from the East Coast when her husband took a job at UNM, and she has started several biotech firms here, going to Gary's discussion about our biosciences sector. She's also on the board of ABQID, a business accelerator. Lori, you started a company in Philadelphia, and you've started several here. Biggest differences in those experiences?
Well, those are It's two very different communities. Philadelphia, of course, is a very much larger city, and starting a company in Philadelphia really meant tapping into the angel investors that were there. And Philadelphia has 65,000 millionaires in the greater Philadelphia area. So starting a company there was really all about tapping into that capital just to get it started. And biotech company is very capital intense. So, but when I moved here to New Mexico, it's been 10 years now, and I can tell you there's been an enormous change in the startup ecosystem here. At the beginning, yes, again, there's New Mexico Angels, which has been here for many years.
Those are high net worth individuals who will invest directly in companies, basically?
Exactly. Okay. High net worth individuals who are looking to do two things, really put their money to work locally to help build and grow businesses locally, and also, you know, make a return on their investment with a high growth small company. But in the last few years, we've made amazing with the help of Gary Obedal and the Mayor Barry. We have now, I think, 5 business accelerators. Now, business accelerators are organizations that help entrepreneurs get started with a lean startup method, not necessarily using a lot of angel capital to start with, but first developing their business model and finding the best approach and finding the easiest way to get a toehold in the business. So ABQID is a terrific business accelerator that I've been part of since the beginning. We've now been capturing not just national attention, but international attention to bring entrepreneurs here to start their businesses because the program is so good. There are a couple of things that we have here very unique in New Mexico that we didn't have in Philadelphia. Okay, for example, the two national laboratories, a terrific program that is here in New Mexico that exists probably nowhere else is the New Mexico Small Business Association program, the NMSBA program. This is where we can get a grant from the state to actually tap into the talent of the national laboratories. So it's with an easy application, an entrepreneur can start a company here and then utilize the talent at the national labs to do a small project. This is a way to add value to your company with the talent that you can find nowhere else in the world. So that's a very unique program. It's an easy access program, and it's a unique way to really add value to your startup company here in New Mexico. We do have a number of new seed funding opportunities because the Catalyst Fund has come through, and this is all very new here in New Mexico. But it's now set the stage for entrepreneurship here. So I think a big company like Amazon that comes here, they're not just going to have individuals working for them. They're going to bring their spouses. They're going to bring their families. And those people are going to want to do new things. The startup ecosystem will be a great place for spouses and people to grow their businesses.
Okay. Well, Lori, thank you so much for joining us for a couple minutes this morning. I really appreciate it. Lori Upham.
Okay, thank you.
Lisa Kutila, so what are the building blocks we have in place here like that to grow companies? What are we lacking? What do we need?
Well, I think Lori and Gary mentioned some of those. There are many infrastructure programs. Another thing that the university is doing is helping to build an innovation district in a public-private partnership with the city and the county and the business community called Innovate ABQ. So that's really developing a place and a dense kind of environment, meaning that people can interact frequently to spur more innovation. This is innovation both for new research ideas that come from our universities and national labs. We have a program called Innovate New Mexico that is bringing us together to showcase those assets a couple of times a year for out-of-state investors and corporations. And then finally, I want to mention that another area the university is now focusing on is student entrepreneurship. So we began a program called the Innovation Academy a few years ago, and that's grown rapidly. We have 750 students now enrolled in courses that build skills in innovation, creativity, and entrepreneurship. We hold pitch competitions. We introduce them to the startups. We do a lot of things to foster that kind of entrepreneurial, spirit in our students, including courses where the students actually start businesses. And we have 14 of those student-led businesses now that are in their early stages.
Is this a way to keep students here? And will we be able to, if they build that cool company, can we keep it here?
That is absolutely the goal. We see a lot of our graduates who do leave the state for, jobs in other parts of the country, and many of them don't want to leave. They would like to stay here. And we know the demographic and the shifts in the economy are saying that more and more of our job growth is really going to be from our entrepreneurial companies and our small businesses. So if the students learn the skills necessary to either join a startup or start their own business while they're still in college, that's a great opportunity for them and a great opportunity for our community.
Gary Opedal, we have a new mayor in office, and as a legislator, as Greg referred to, and as a state auditor, Tim Keller was very critical about how states and cities use incentives. We'll have a new governor in a year. We don't know what that will look like. Do you see any changes on the horizon in terms of how we go about economic development here in Albuquerque? Should there be changes?
Well, we can always continuously improve and up our game. There's always an opportunity for an upgrade. And we look forward to working with Tim Keller to implement his vision for our
And
economy.
I should say he takes office December 1st, obviously. He's not the mayor yet.
He will take December 1st. Current Mayor Barry and he had a lunch yesterday, and Mayor and I talked last night, and we're very excited about Tim's approaches and his vision for moving our city forward. It's always good to have new ideas and mix them in with what's currently there and see where we can go with that. Upgrades are always possible, or we look forward to finding them.
Well, I want to thank you all. That's all the time we have today. And thank you to everyone who joined us today on the phone or online to talk about economic development. Thanks to my guests, Lori Upham, Lisa Kutila, Gary Tonjes, Gary Opedal, Greg Leroy, and Tim Nitti. You can continue the conversation on Twitter using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. And we have more links and resources online at KUNM.org. Our engineer today is Marino Spencer. Victor Onimole screened your calls, and Ed Williams live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. Come back. We will be back after Thanksgiving with Let's Talk New Mexico. Thanks for joining us. I'm Megan Kamrick. Let's Talk New Mexico is on KUNM. We're public service of the University of New Mexico.